What's up, everyone? This is Jay, aka Brother Soap, welcoming you to the 62nd episode of the British Soap Podcast. I am here with my girl, my partner in crime, the Kate to my oats, Miss Lindsay Amanda. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule, running all of the BBC soaps, and blessing EastEnders with your presence. How do you feel about your handiwork so far, Mama?
Oh, Lord. I have to admit, it's very good. I enjoy it. I've enjoyed it a lot. It's been I wouldn't say it's been a complete 180% change, but it's working on it. There's still, you know, some things that need to be tweaked a little bit, but I don't blame her. he did a lot of stuff that might not be salvageable, but you know, I'm very happy with how the show has been since she took the show back on 100% on her own. I like the transition. I liked all the comebacks that happened in the 3-week period. Everything was great as far as I'm concerned, with a few little nippy things, but you know, nothing too horrible has happened this week that, you know, or in this period that made me want to throw my TV across the room. So.
Yeah, I agree. The dialogue is snappy. You've got your reference to TV shows that some people know, some people don't, and movies and film. You got your current event references. You've got children that are elevated to intelligence, and so they have quality storylines that are worthy of them and show that they are quality human beings that make difficult decisions. Love that. You got some powerhouse acting. You know, the fallout from the death of, the reveal that Gray was a serial killer has just been on point. You've got strong performances in Jean just going at Stacy like nobody's business. Denise and Chelsea going at it over the adoption. Kim being a mess when it comes to Howie. Everything going on with Kat and her son trying to get over on Lisa Bullock. I mean, amazing. Just excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent how she's bringing it all together. And as is typical with Kate Oates running soaps, once she is in charge, you can tell because things just gel well. There is something that woman has, there's just a gift that she has about her where she can take all of the things that we love about soap and bring them all together in a format that just feels phenomenal and well thought out and well executed. And it's been too long. So I'm not going to shade the last producer too much because for the most part, I felt like, you know, he did a decent job, right? But EastEnders never really felt like a Kate Oates production. You know, I've said a lot that Hobie City to me did from the beginning. And I don't remember if she had any influence over those first episodes of Hobie City when she transitioned. But I do like the fact that the Hobie City producer is going to be producing EastEnders because, you know, we have been loving that series for the entire time since Kate Oates has been in charge and since the producer, you know, switchover kind of happened as well. But EastEnders has been great. You know, I'm back to my days enjoying her run of Emmerdale, her run of Coronation Street. This is some injection that the show needed. It's been fantastic. So I hope it continues because I love it. I need her to write all the episodes, produce all the episodes. I need the BBC to give her all the money she needs and all the time she needs so she can devote time to EastEnders while also, you know, she can pass the buck on them other soaps. You know. But it's excellent. It's excellent. I'm very happy. And it's been a while since I felt this way about the soap. But yeah, Kate Oates has not disappointed me since, you know, introducing us to Robert, the recast on Emmerdale.
Nah.
Other than that, I've been good.
Yeah. Other than that, all fine and dandy with the world.
But it's great. It's been great so far. So yeah, I'm glad you like it. It looks like the fans are liking it for the most part. So I love that too. I think it's excellent. Yeah. All right, well, we're just going to get right on into it. I will say up front, if there's a question about British soaps that you all have or we do not cover something today that you would have liked us to have discussed, head over to britishsoappodcast.tumblr.com to shoot us an ask or hit us up on the Twitterations at UK Soap Podcast. Let's jump into Oats Enders, Miss Lindsay. What the hells? What did Oats Enders do to make you say, "What in the hell, Gene at a Bouncy Castle?"
Actually, that's one of my, I understand that she's going manic and everything because, you know, I have family that has bipolar disorder. I know how it goes. I've seen how it is. But watching Jean go overboard and hurting children while having fun herself and not showing, you know, any remorse for it whatsoever kind of made me mad a little bit. Even though, and it's like, I know that she has, like, you know, a disease, something that, you know, you have issues with. Did they ever show her not taking her medication?
I think they did before Kate Oates' run start.
Okay.
I think she stopped taking.
Because I was like, I don't remember what they showed her stopping taking her
medication.
I
think it's been a few months that she's not been doing that.
Okay, because it's like you've known for a while that she's kind of going a little, you know, manic and she's overly dramatically happy and everything. And I understand that. But if you get a bouncy castle for the kids, do not spend all day in it by yourself. And hurt kids and make a fool out of yourself. Have fun, yes, but it was meant for the kids. Have a little bit of fun. Come down. Do what you gotta do. You know, oh, Jean's been a treat. She's been great. The character going through what she's going through again because she's refusing to take her medicine is great, but it's just like she hurt a kid and then it's like, I didn't do that. What makes you think I did that? No, that doesn't mesh well with me. That's like faking a leg injury to get sympathy for somebody else. That happened in another show that I watched, and it made me mad. So, I was not the hugest fan of that, to be completely and utterly honest. The Bouncy Castle was too much, and it hogged half the square. But, you know, like I said, I know that it was, you know, part of her manic episode, but hurting children and then saying that she didn't when, you know, he was right there is not okay.
A part of that story I also thought wasn't okay was Harvey seeming to downplay and dismiss Stacy's concerns about her mom's mental health, because the signs were clear. You know, Jean has been acting erratically. I think Stacy ultimately had that conversation with him after she just turned up at his place, like, "I'm moving in," as if that's a perfectly normal thing to suggest to someone that you barely know on no
Yeah,
notice.
for somebody that you've been dating a whole month.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure how much he has to see before he recognizes that, no, Jean is really going through something and she really needs some support, as Stacy said, right? You can't just, you know, she's like, "You do not have the capabilities of handling this. My mother needs help. You
Yeah.
have not seen her at her worst like I have." So I don't know why he is choosing to be totally blind to this. when he's just coming out of a situation where he was blind to his son's involvement with racists, which led to him having to be put in jail. So, I mean, if Harvey continues his blindness trajectory, Jean's going to be in the hospital, you know, in a little bit, or she's going to crash like Stacy said, and then he's going to have to deal with those consequences, and he's going to be looking stupid again for not paying attention to the signs. But, you know, the story is being told very well. You know, the queen playing Jean got her British Soap Award for a reason. She is phenomenal with her turns to, you know, acting like Stacy is some horrible mother, when the reality is she isn't taking care of her illness. She doesn't want to hear that. And so she's just doing what she wants to do and being reckless and destructive. And it's not cute. So I think it's going to... That's a good story. That's those two together, that pairing is always fire, and I cannot wait to see what happens with it, because they have been putting in some work on that story these past couple weeks, and both actresses are just knocking it out of the park, as usual, you know?
Yep.
Yes, yes, yes. All right. So what the hells do you have that were not dictated by me? What if he's
doing this to the major center? That was actually one of them. Okay. But I'm kind of over, I want to say her name's Jada. That's her name, right?
Yeah, I'm not, with her too. Agreed.
I mean, like, her as a human being kind of just annoys me, but her friends annoy me more.
Yeah.
I mean, like... Yeah, I'm going to have a party over at Sharon's house, and you know, Martin and Nancy's boy toy there, Zach, are like, heck you are. And then she's like, why don't you guys go out on a pub night and all this stuff? And, you know, little Will's over there trying to save her backside. And then they end up coming over, nobody comes because he saves her from getting in trouble. And who walks in is, you know, joints are being smoked. Martin and Zach walk in, Sonia walks in, and was just like, yeah, you can put that out, and you can leave, and you can leave, and you can leave. And it's just like, yep, these girls are not a good influence on her, and... While she's quote unquote trying with Alyssa, she's, you know, I'm glad she, you know, canceled the party initially, but at the same time, it's just like, why is she going through the trouble of trying to have this party when she knows there's a chance that there is no way in hell that Sharon's gonna let her. Even if she's back a day after, there's no way in hell that, you know, she would get away with that with as many people as she knows on square. So it's just like,
I mean, for all of Jada's high and mighty talk about being some wise and elevated Zen adult who is so adult and mature, how dare she date a child that's like a year younger than her?
Yeah,
she's a child.
I don't date children.
She's
a child.
Yeah, it's
like I don't date kids.
Mm-hmm. Her mentality is a child. She leaves her child on, Sharon's doorstep with no explanation. She goes back and forth over whether or not she wants to mother this child. She is hateful. Then she's loving one extreme to another to people that are trying to help her out, including now Will, who obviously had a crush on her. To me, I thought she seemed to have a little crush on him as well. But then all of a sudden, she's having this huge blow up about, oh, how dare you read the signals that were clearly there, and you dare to give me flowers after, you know, saving my ass, being sweet to me for weeks, me accepting your date, me hearing that, you know, you were probably interested in me. No, I'm just going to ignore all that and then treat you like crap and say, oh my God, you look at a man and all of a sudden he thinks he can sleep with you. when that sweet kid was just trying to be nice, right? That immaturity that she has, like, that takes away all of her high and mighty talk about being so elevated that she can't date a child. Girl, you are acting like a child. You know what a grown-up does? A grown-up, when some heifers decide, after you have told them you are not going to have a party at your house, they decide to come to your house anyway, you say, no, and we are no longer friends. I am a mother, I am raising my child, and that is the priority. You can't deal with that, we're not friends anymore. Goodbye. That's maturity. Maturity is not letting the girls into the house, having weed out, and then like kind of trying to emotionally get people to not tell Sharon so that, because it was not a big deal. I'm sorry, I thought we were a grown-ass woman. So grown-ass women accept responsibility for their actions. You're a mother, right? Isn't that what you told your girls? You're a mother. So since you're a mother, you're this elevated person, you should be on the side of, you know, doing the mature and responsible thing, right? But no, she's a child, and it's annoying. And I think I said when she started on this show, the same way I feel right now, the way that they are writing Jada is the same way they wrote Keegan when they first started. You've got new black character who is butting heads with an established character. Now, with Keegan, it was Denise. With Jada, it is, Queen Sharon. It's Queen Sharon. And it's just annoying because these kids come in acting like they know everything, acting like they're more grown than the people that are, you know, twice their age. And they do a bunch of stupid stuff to make it clear that they're children in, half pint adult bodies. And they still like act all like entitled and righteous, and I'm just like, stop it. So yeah, I need the EastEnders to either hurry up and switch her personality and make it less this annoying, right? Because we did eventually get that with Keegan, or get her off the show, because I don't have time for it. It's irritating, I don't like it, and it's just a waste of time. You know, there's better stories that could be told. Well, you know, what's Dottie doing? What's Vinny doing? Let's focus on that set. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, I'm not here for Jada. I'm not here for it, because we've already seen that annoying story with Keegan. I'm done. I don't need it again. Let's move on. You know what I'm saying? Let's focus on the bully story and get more kids stabbed. That's more interesting to me.
Yeah, it's like, we need to see that again, because, you know, that child needed a good kick.
Look, he needed a stabbing for that whack-ass rap he put on the phone screen. Come on now. It was just bad. Shucks. Do you have any other what the hells, mama?
Let's talk about our favorite named man who conned Stewart out of so much flippin' money. I'm sorry, herbal remedies work like garbage. I don't believe in that herb crop. I don't believe it. And Warren just sitting there across the table with this big smug smile on his face saying, oh, this stuff will make you feel so much better, I promise you, blah blah blah, while his cancer is getting worse. I'm just like, dude, no. And then when his nana came back and I did my happy dance of joy when he did, and he called her dirt, did Stewart make me happy, because I was just like, I would have liked to see the aftermath of that and to see what his face looked like when he was done, because I didn't like that guy from the 3 seconds he was on screen. So I was just like, yep, nope, I'm done with this herbal remedy nonsense. Get the surgery done so you can have, you know, Roland or whatever his name is, and have cute little family stuff and be alive longer and not listen to a dude say, my cancer went away. My money is, he had the surgery done. He's just doing it to get the money. But I'm just like, I don't like people like that. People who say, oh, all of these disgusting health drinks will make your tumor go. No. I don't agree. I don't like it. I don't think it's real. I don't think he was real. He was faker than a than a fake plant that sits outside because you'd have no place to put it. I hated that guy. It's just like, yep, nope, I'm done. Yeah. Every time I saw him on screen, I wanted to punch him in the nose.
You know, I didn't even clock that his name was Warren, but I'm with you and being annoyed by that story. And part of what has this down in my what the hells is Stuart spending up all the joint account money on that whack, you know, supplementary alternative therapy medicine that did nothing for him. Because what happened in the show, Rainey is telling him, okay, we're in overdraft because all of our money was spent apparently on your damn therapies. And Stu is just like blindly, yeah, it's great because this stuff is working. But what is the problem with that? The money that Stu has wasted on this was to go to Bernie to help out her family with the money problems because she agreed to have their baby. Mm-hmm. Now the money is gone, wasted on crap that is doing nothing to cure Stuart's cancer. So, you know, I appreciate the story for what it is. You know, I did work educating people about cancer diagnoses for some time. Yes, there are a lot of, you know, things that are out there purported to treat cancer. And really what it is a money-making scheme for the people making money off the products, right? But in this storyline, that's just going to be a problem because what are we going to get next week? You know, the show ended with, you know, Bernie has had the baby and now Rainey's like, you know, you've got to keep this child. I can't have you giving me this child without knowing the full story. She says that she tells half the story that Stuart has a serious cancer. She ain't also add that, and we don't have any money to pay you.
Yeah, it's like all the money is gone, and she ends up giving the baby back anyway, which is going to be a real pain at the backside. But she realized she ain't going to get all the money in one false go. So
that's a problem. So Stuart has now complicated the problems of the family for no reason. And he's still got to go through this procedure if the show isn't getting ready to off him because he was refusing to get treatment. And, you know, he's jeopardized the family's finances and just left his wife and his brother for nothing for months, you know? And that's a mess. So, yeah, I'm interested in seeing what they do with it. But there's going to be a lot of anger and hurt feelings, I feel like, in the highway and, you know, the Bernice clan household for some time. Because, he's made some serious misjudgments over these last couple months.
You know? Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do you have any other what the hells, ma'am?
No, but I'll let you say yours and see if they met my list, too. Because I had a few, but they weren't, you know, huge.
Okay, so I will go ahead and let's go backwards from what I watched. Okay, for my first what the hell, I'm going to say I was what the helling Chelsea throwing Denise's decision to have Raymond adopted out in her face. And I'll explain why that's a what the hell in a minute. Because we know the story.
Yep.
Chelsea has decided to give away her child because he is a product of Gray. And she was concerned that, you know, the child would not get a fair shake in life if people knew who his father was, right? Mm-hmm. Now, how she didn't immediately think about the fact that she is the child of a serial killer until the tail end of Friday's episode was beyond me. But, you know, she, for storyline purposes, she did not do that for some time. And so Denise encounters her having a conversation with a woman who is going to help her adopt out her child. And after, you know, Chelsea does not reveal who this person is at all, having lunch with her daughter, and Denise clocks a pamphlet on the table about adoption and realize what happened, she's just like, you cannot do this. what are you doing? Don't do this. And I appreciated that dynamic, and it was kind of scene of the week worthy, because what do we have? We have the one thing that Sean O'Connor got right in his tenure. This yep. adoption storyline with Denise, except playing the role of Kim this time is Denise, who, and playing the role of Denise is her daughter. Because you remember, Kim was new that Denise did not need to adopt that child out. She said that child needed to be with her mother and all the things Denise was thinking. She was just doing the most. She needed to make sure that child stayed home. That was the most important thing. And then here we've got Denise now watching her daughter about to make the same poor decision that she did. It was fantastic. So I was hoping that Denise would be the one to say, you know, baby, I just went through this. I just went through this with Raymond. Kim tried to warn me. I didn't listen. But where is Raymond now? He is home because I realized it was a mistake. You don't need to go the same trajectory that I did. Instead of Denise being the first person to say that, Chelsea actually said it to her.
Chelsea said it first.
Yeah, but see, the reason I had a problem with that is because there wasn't the follow-through. So yes, Chelsea says to Denise, you just went through this. The next statement should have been, and where is Raymond now? We're done with the conversation. Raymond is home because it was a mistake. But the show let it drag on a little bit, so Denise didn't say that to Chelsea. And Chelsea did not, you know, that did not hit her brain. And so I was just kind of like, I mean, we just now pretend like Raymond ain't home, like the Raymond is still adopted, like that this was not a mistake that Denise has remedied. But fortunately, by the end of the Friday episode and after, you know, Chelsea having the nice little heart-to-heart with the kids who decided to lock themselves in the house because yes. reasons. And yes. so they got to, you know, commiserate over their serial killer fathers, you know. Friday's episode sees Chelsea calming her child down and saying, Mama's here, I got you. Love that. But, you know, I just wanted to happen a little bit faster because it was getting on my nerves. I'm like, why is nobody saying that Raymond is holding and home and Denise made a mistake? What are y'all doing? So, yeah. So I was what the hell about that. Yes. What did you think of that storyline and Chelsea wanting to give up her child?
You see, I'm not 100% against why she wants to do it, because I could kind of see where she was going with it, and like, you know, I don't want him to figure out dad was, you know, somebody who killed people, you know. I want him to go on having a blissful, happy life. But, you know, I'm kind of curious whether, based on Friday's episode, whether she's still going to go through with the adoption. My money is probably. Or if she's going to, you know, keep him, because the conversation that she had with, you know, Mac and Mia, you know, locked outside of, you know, the house. And, you know, the conversation she's been having with everyone else. Maybe got into her head that maybe it's not, you know, the end of the world, that, you know, she's his mom. He doesn't have to have a dad. And if he does have a dad, it's going to be somebody that she finds suitable to be his dad.
Right.
He doesn't need to know that unless, you know, he's pale ass white man like Gray was. That, you know, that this is your dad. He's not your real dad, but he is the dad that you have now. I mean, I have one of those.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who my real dad is. I've never met him. I have no idea who he is. But every week I talk to the person that is my dad. The person who raised me from when I was an infant onward is my dad. So, I mean, like, if something like that happens when he's still baby-like and they're still together and they, you know, grow up knowing that, it's just like, yeah, just say, guess what, he's your dad. Your real dad doesn't exist. That's what my mom told me.
And you know, baby girl, I think we've talked about this. You know, we have parallel stories with that. You know, I grew up thinking that my adoptive father was my biological father. Found out that I had a different biological father when I was 16, and I met him a total of once. So, but the knowledge of his existence and, you know, my family on his side does not change in my heart who I consider to be my father. And that's the man that raised me from a child, you know? So as far as the story goes, the reveal that Ray is a serial killer, that's like a storyline 10 years down the line when they have decided to age this child to 32. Like, that'd be their story. So I'm like, yeah, let's be done. That we got everything wrapped up in a bow on Friday. Can we let this be the end of this story? We're done.
I'm hoping she keeps it and that's the end. Yeah. But based on, you know, how stuff goes, I'm still just going to last another 6 months.
Well, hopefully not, because I think Kate Oates only has control of this show for 6 months, and I don't need this story. We done. She wrapped it up beautifully. Stop. let's let it be. Shucks. Since we are talking about the Fox Clan, let's keep it there. I'm a little upset with Kim right now. Kim is getting on my nerves because I do not like the way she is treating Howie. So I think the show is definitely going to have these two get together long term. And I think excellent, because this brother playing Howie is excellent. So good. So funny, so deep, so sentimental. Like, you could just see the love he has in his eyes for Kim and everything that he's doing. And brother just playing. He has been a boss in his role since he started, so I love it. But I'm not feeling Kim being oblivious. You know, here he is taking time away from his job to help Kim shoot this stupid video that is not going to impress no one. He's sitting up there, and I think they said, take 17. Meanwhile, he's on the phone because he has missed out on a job, and he's being called unprofessional because he didn't do his job. And Kim is hearing this, but not hearing this, because all she's focused on is Howie editing her video so that Pearl can get this scholarship for the school. Just totally oblivious to him. And then, at the end of the day, when Howie does the wise thing, just talks to Pearl and says, baby girl, why do you like your school? And she just calls out why she likes it. And he's like, okay, mama, do that again for me, but on video, right? And that seems to be the thing that puts Pearl in the top running to get the scholarship. And he reveals this to Kim. She's totally hateful and disrespectful. He has turned her clown show into something that is sweet and warm, involving the child and showing the truth about who they are, and she's being so ridiculous she can't see it. I'm over it. I need her to wake up. I'm sick of this. I need her to wake up and appreciate that good man, because I need good quality love story in her life and her not to mess it up for no reason because she wants to be an Instagram star. Okay, for what? Who is that helping? Calm down, you know? So, yeah, that was me. Yeah, how are you feeling about Kim and Howie?
You know, I love Kim and Howie, and I kind of went, did he tell her that he was gay?
No, she just assumed.
That's what I thought, because I was just like, why are they not together yet? And then I keep hearing, I wish he didn't bat for the others. I'm just like, dude, do you not see how he's looking at you with the face? I just want to bop your heads together and make you smooch, because it's just like, dude, no, he loves your face.
Well, y'all remember, when Patrick pointed out to her that he was attracted to her, that's when Kim was like, no, he's gay. And Patrick's like, girl, I mean, gay for you. What you talking about? And she, you know, explains to the audience she thought that he was gay, and so it wasn't clicking. But once Patrick broke it down, she was like, oh.
And that's, so then that's afterwards, what it hit. Yeah.
They had the scene where, you know, she talked with him, and she recognized that he was about her, but she chose to, like, highlight, hey, you know, I'm very glad that you are my friend. And she focused on that. And I think the way the show was playing it is, she's saying the words, but I think her heart is starting to warm. So I need her focus more on the warmth and not the selfishness. Because, you know, Kim's comedy and her selfishness is funny to a point, but sometimes it's hurtful. And that's what I'm seeing in the way that she's treating this sweet guy. So I need her to stop, get her stuff together, and recognize and appreciate that man and all the goodness he's doing. Because honestly, out of all the men that Kim has had on this show, he has been the sweetest.
He's been my favorite. Agreed. He hasn't even been with her for very long. Agreed. I kind of wish we got to see the full video, though, and they didn't cut it out. I kind of want to see what he did, but they never really showed that. It kind of hurt my soul.
Well, you still got time. You know, but I need Kim to see this king for the king he is and stop BSing. I need that in my life.
True. 100%. Agreed.
Now, some other BS I need to stop. I need Kat's doggone BS to stop. Look here. I love me some Kat, but Kat was tripping. Tommy is trying to tell this woman, you know, about how, you know, tough he's having it at school. And Kat is like just quick to dismiss his concerns as nothing. You know, Tommy's telling her, you know, don't do too much. You know, I'm concerned about these bullies. And Kat's just kind of going in and rushing in and doing too much. And then a big thing of the past couple weeks. So I don't know how Kat thought she was going to not have to handle any of the shady side of Phil's business, but she gets this package that Phil tells her to accept because it needs to go to someone and it needs to get delivered where it needs to be delivered. So does Kat take the package, put it in the house somewhere, and go on about her business? No. Kat, knowing this is a shady package, immediately opens the packet. You do not know what evil person Phil is involved with, and inside this thing was a gun. What if it was drugs? I mean, it's bad enough that it was a gun, but Kat just loses all of her sanity and just opens up this package. And so now we've got a situation where a gun is able to be gotten. You know, initially I thought it was going to be by Tommy, but it ended up being the younger siblings, I think Bert and Ernie.
Yeah, Bert and Ernie. They were playing with it. Because
Kat opened the doggone package, and then not only opened the package, didn't lock it up anywhere. She ain't put it in nobody's safe. She just left it where it could be easily accessed by the kid. And I was just like, what the hell, sis? Sis, you were smarter than this. You used to be a millionaire. What are you doing? What are you doing? This is ridiculous. So, yeah, I was not feeling that. And I hope this little, you know, journey into stupidity that Kat has been doing, that needs to stop. Because sis is much more intelligent than this. And I was not feeling that trajectory at all. You know, how you feeling about how she reacted to, you know, news of the stabbing? So, you know, those doggone bullies were messing with little Tommy. He thought that one kid was being his friend because he was, you know, acting like he was being all friendly. But then when Tommy gets there to hang out with him, it's just a setup so that other bully could beat him up. And, you know, through their little scuffle, dude ended up getting stabbed because he got pushed into that backpack where Tommy, you know, had that gun. And the knife.
The knife.
And I thought the way all of that played out was pretty excellent. And I did kind of raise my eyebrow, though, at Kat being so quick to shop him to the cops when she just went through this with Phil. So what did you think about how that played out?
You know, that kid was a little douche to do anyway. So, I mean, like, I don't condone what happened, and it was an accident. But at the same time, he watched him put the knife back in his bag, so he should have known better than to, you know, make it so he used it as a shield so he could get stabbed.
Right.
So it was his own dang fault that he got stabbed.
Yeah.
And word to the wise, young child, you can still find videos after you delete them. Just saying. But, because that other little dude was recording the entire time. So, just like, so this is what's going to happen, huh? You're going to have Tommy go down for stabbing a kid by accident while this other kid recorded it. And now, you know, it's just like, okay, the Sydney kid was a little dick. He didn't deserve to get stabbed. But, you know, his home life wasn't great. Isaac, you know, saw to that. You know, we saw that before he ran off to Trinidad to be with his mom. But it's just like, I'm over, you know, bullying storylines altogether. It's just not a cute thing. It's not nice. I was bullied back in school. I have no qualms saying this. I was a bullied kid with my cerebral palsy and everything. I got laughed at because I walked crooked all the time and everything. So, yeah, I understand where he's coming from. But, A, bringing a knife to school every day was dumb to start with. Lily clocked that first day she found it in the bag. You know, it's just, I'm just like, I'm glad it got him in the shoulder, though, because I'm not sure how another, you know, child murderer on EastEnders would have went, even though if it was in self-defense.
How do you feel about Kat's reaction to finding out the truth about what Tommy did?
It kind of felt mesh to me, to be honest, at first, because she's just like, you know, you could tell me anything, right? I'll tell you, you tell me, it'll be like our own little bond thing. You know that, right? He's like, yeah, I didn't mean to do it. And then the next thing you know, Jack's sitting at the door. Right. I'm just like, ugh. They need to get Kat back to normal, please. That's all I have to say, because it's just like, not only does she rat him out, she tries to defend him while the interviewer's, you know, talking to him, even though she's the one who ratted him out. I'm just like, why is she even in the room? I mean, like any other time you see something like that, the adult has to sit on the other side of the glass, you know, like. And I was just like, yep, no, I'm don't care. Just get her back to the way she was, you know, have Tommy explain that it was in self-defense and he walked into the knife after he flipped it about and stuff went down and he didn't mean to, and, you know, all this stuff. Because I'm sick of this bullying storyline and it needs to stop.
I'm with you on that, baby. Yeah, the less bullying storylines, the better. I agree with you on that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. All right, Mama, let's switch it up and go to scenes of the week. So what did Oats Enders do that you enjoyed these past 3 weeks, other than almost everything?
So I might get flack for this because I thought it was kind of brilliant and kind of sad at the same time. I liked it when... I forgot her name. We just spent like 20 minutes talking about her in Above the Castle.
Oh, Jean.
Yes, Jean. Jean takes Arthur to the same tube station that Kush got, you know, pushed under.
That was tough.
And explained and flat out said in, you know, the most bluntest of terms, oh, this is where Gray pushed your dad under a train. And then, you know, Kat's sitting on the phone. Jean's not allowed to have alone time with any of the kids without her present or without somebody present with her. And she takes Arthur to the train there, and Stacy's freaking out, and you got Martin freaking out, and you got everybody freaking out. And they're running, and then you have, you know, Billy saving the day. Oh, I just saw Jean taking Arthur to the tube station. I'm like, oh, crap. And then you see that confrontation between Stacy and Jean, and then you have little Arthur hugging Martin like he's the last person on earth. And I was sitting there trying not to cry the entire time, because that was one of the most beautifully done bunch of scenes in an episode that I have seen on EastEnders. It's so dang long that I just wanted to hug Kato. It was beautifully done. All the acting was brilliant. The yelling and screaming at one another was brilliant. That it was all justified, because Stacy was going to tell him in a much, more civilized manner, kind of like what Keegan did to the kids. It's just like, oh, that is the worst thing to tell a, what, five-year-old? He's like 4 or 5 or something now, maybe a little bit older. But it's just like, dude, no. Beautifully done, though.
Look here. Julianne Wright and Lacey Turner have long been perfectly cast as mother and daughter. They both play those roles phenomenally. Every award each actress gets, they deserve it. And scenes like you're describing, where they're calling upon history, Jean being vicious with it, because what she's doing, she's trying to get Stacy back for making the decisions not to have her kids alone with her, because Jean is manic and she doesn't want the children hurt, because Jean has already hurt one of the children. You know what I'm saying? So Jean, who is, still not being responsible with regards to her medication, is still being hateful, is being vicious, and again, went into that vicious tirade about how Stacy is some horrible mother, when the reality is Jean could have been looking at a mirror saying a lot of the stuff that she was saying to Stacy. But yeah, it was excellent and totally inappropriate. You don't take a child that young and bring them to the spot where the father died and then say that. And that kid could have gotten killed by a subway train. You saw how close that was. It was ridiculous.
He was really flipping close. And she was like, oh, it's fine. Yes. I'm just going to stare at another wall while he's looking head on into a train before he runs over to I'm just like, dude.
Because she was totally not paying attention. Yes.
Totally well done.
They are showing the realities of that illness. And, I need Jean to snap to it, because, I think they're going to get some traction out of it, so I'm very interested in seeing what develops next. But, whew, Jean is doing the most, and I hope that, we don't have to see a significant tragedy for her to snap back to it, but, yeah, I think that story's going to have some traction for some time. Yes. What else you got, Mama, for your scenes of the week?
So, I might get flashed for this one, too, because it involves Dottie. I love that Dottie's just like, walks up to Sonia and says, I need $300 from you, or 300 quid from you, because I need to get Kira out of jail. She doesn't say that, but we figure it out throughout the next few episodes that she wants to hire on Stacy's wife there, whose name I can, Eve's their name, I think. But I couldn't remember her name. But she walks up to Eve and I'm like, this is all I have. I need your help with something. And Suki isn't listening to anything anybody has to say, because she is mad. She just wants, Kira out of jail, and nobody's helping. She has her moments with, Whitney. She has her moments everywhere, and she's just yelling at everybody. So, Dottie and her infinite wisdom finally, working. She gets Eve to help, and she figures out that the lawyer who has been, helping Kira and telling him to, plead guilty and all this, is actually working for a rival family that doesn't like them at all, and was just like, we're firing this woman, we're getting you a new lawyer. And then the next thing you know, Kira is out of jail, and Suki's happy, and Vinny is happy, and she's a part of the family now for probably 2 seconds. But you know, she feels happy for the first time in a while because she's finally being accepted by somebody for doing something kind for the family. And I thought that was really cool. Plus, Kim is back and not in jail. So that's a treat. So it's just like, yep, we're good. I thought it was really good. I thought while I don't like the character of Dottie at all, I think she's, you know, not the, you know, best character in the world. I never have particularly liked her. Getting her head out of her behind and Sonia, you know, giving her the money, even though she's going to have to pay it back again. But, you know, she practically owns the bar now, so she can probably do it. You know. She helped out, and she got the result that they wanted. So getting accepted by somebody for the first time in a while made her feel happy, made them feel happy. Everybody's happy for the first time in a while, even Suki. So maybe her and Eve can finally, you know, become friends a little.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what's going on with that, and I don't trust, you know, Suki going gay. We'll see what happens with that. But, you know, I love Millie Zero as Dottie. I think she's been a boss in that role since she started. And I don't know what the pulse is, you know, with regards to people who watch the show generally, but I think this girl has been phenomenal. And it's been interesting kind of how they've transitioned her because, you know, to be honest, she cheated on Vinny, so Vinny could have nothing to do with this girl, but, you know, he's got a sweet spot for her, so much so that he has risked angering his tough broad of a mom to have this girl in their house. And she has proven herself to be worthy, because first, she clocked that Suki was being too difficult on Vinny for no reason, so Suki started to check herself. And then, because of Dottie, she helped to figure out that the attorney that was giving horrible advice to the family regarding Key Rat really worked for a rival and was trying to undercut the business interest, you know, of Suki and her family, just so that the rival could get one over on her. And if it wasn't for Dottie's presence, that may have been missed. So I thought it was an interesting way for the storyline to go. A little bit of redemption to Dottie for, you know, the way she treated Vinny. And I'm not sure what they're going to do with her in the household, but it's interesting. You know, we still got that thread out there that her dad is her dad. What's her dad's name? Sonia's fake daddy? I can't remember right now.
I can't remember either.
All I'm seeing is him in the suit that he used to meet Prince Charles right
yes.
now.
Yes. Yes. Crap. I can't remember.
That's it. I'm Googling now.
Let's see.
But not Nick, the other one who is
Rocky.
There we go. So, yeah.
I was like, I know it began with an R. That's about my extent of remembrance.
Yes. So right now we still have the thread that Sylvester Stallone is Dottie's dad out there. So I'm not sure what EastEnders is going to do with that. But I think both of those actors play well off each other. And if that's true, I think that'll be an interesting family dynamic. You know, I'd like to see those two as a family unit the same way we're seeing Harvey and Bobby's girlfriend and Robbie Roscoe as a family unit. I think that's interesting. So, yeah. I'm very interested in what they do with that. Yeah. Okay. Did you have any others, or was that your last?
Yes, I do. I have one more.
Yes, ma'am.
I liked the opposite reactions of Mick and Shirley when Zach told them what happened to Tina. I loved that. I mean, like, you know, Mick is in a, you know, hot mess, and Shirley's been in a hot mess chugging bottles of vodka, even though she's had a concussion for, you know, the past 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So, but he walks up, and he's really cool, and he's like, I talked to somebody, and they told me what happened, and he explained what happened, and Shirley's like, thank you. I appreciate your help in figuring out what happened, and Mick just walked out. But and I'm just like, oh, we're going in opposite mode now, And then you have, you know, Janine being, you know, wicked awesome for the first time in a while. And and not being, you know, flat out stupid when it comes to Mick and being like, okay, stop right now. We're going to get you a drink and then we're going on a trip. And they go on this little trip out into middle of Nowheresville where there's water and there's a nice little grassy bridge thing. And they just talk it out. And Janine's like, we're just specks in the universe. So I'm thinking the Galaxy song by Monty Python running through my head as she's like explaining herself and what she thinks she is and how in the end is it going to matter? And because we're all going to die anyway, and how she's a realist. And then they just, like, sit and talk for a while. And then Mick has his moment of screaminess. And then he's like, yeah, thank you. I'm still not over it yet, but I feel this helped. You know, I liked that entire, like, three-episode stretch where they're told, and then they both kind of, you know, even though, you know, they're still mad, obviously, because, you know, everybody's mad, but they have some closure, finally, about what happened, and it was really nice to see the opposite reactions of how it went, you know.
Now, how are you feeling about Mick and Janine being kissing friends now?
Dude, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that since, you know, I know Linda's coming back soon. Mm-hmm. And I also know that Mick is leaving soon. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let them have their time. They're divorced now. I think they're cute. I'm going to be honest. I think they're flipping cute. I'm that weird outsider that thinks Janine finally found somebody, you know, proper good. Rather than some douche canoe. So, you know, let them have their time for the next, you know, however long Mick is there for, and bring Linda back to, you know, do what she do. And, you know, I'm okay with it, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine, but it's doomed because Janine messed up. She took the love of Mick's life and got her drunk so she could get a Mick.
That's probably why he's leaving. Linda's going to come. She's going to see Janine with him. And then, you know, she came and saw me once.
But it's interesting. I didn't put this together. You know, we were talking about Bold and Beautiful before. We started recording today. It's the exact same storyline as Bold and the Beautiful. Sheila is on the Bold and Beautiful. She's done the exact same thing. She set it up to where the alcoholic, in this case, Brooke, got drunk. And then what ended up resulting? She and Ridge end up breaking up. So just like I'm sure comeuppance is eventually going to come for Sheila, this is doomed. Janine just screwed herself. And so when she kind of did that thing when she, you know, jumped out of town after that kiss, you know.
For 3 seconds.
Uh-huh. I was like, is this because she knows that this is not going to work, or are they just shipping her off until Linda comes back so that, you know, we can just get the fire when it all comes back? Because, you know, any happiness she gets is going to be short-lived because she messed up that entire situation. So it's going to be a trip to see it all play out. But there was a bit of, like, it was interesting to see those two, you know, getting hot together. But yeah, at the same time, it's just like, yeah, this is the Titanic.
they'll be hot for a month or so, and then Linda will come back.
Yep.
Just in time to see them like kissing behind the bar or something, and they're like, and be like, what the heck is this?
Yeah.
And you know, I'm just waiting to see. I'm actually more curious about what's going to happen when Mick's gone and Linda's there. you know, especially since you went back into alcoholic mode. So.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they'll end up leaving together. I'm not sure, but we will know soon.
Yep, we will know soon.
Yes. Goodness gracious. All right. Well, let me switch into mine. Mine are pretty quick. I'm going to start with Karen versus Mitch and the reaction to finding out that Gray murdered their daughter. Now, for months, we've seen Bailey trying to make sure that Karen and Mitch got back together. Towards the end of things, it seemed like they were going that direction. They were reminiscing about old feelings. They were getting close to each other. They were spending a bunch of time together. But then it comes out that Gray was really the one behind the murder. And before we get to Keegan's reaction, who was another one that was just on fire with regards to his reaction, some of the first things we saw with Kate Oates was her having those two parents sit down and talk through what it meant that they didn't see what that man was doing. And Mitch just called it out. You know, I had been waiting to see Mitch versus Gray forever, because I remember those early days and Mitch was not feeling Gray at all. And, nope. You know, Karen was sitting there talking to him like, you know, nobody knew what was happening with him. And Mitch was like, no, I knew. I knew. And I didn't trust my instincts. You know, I even sided with you and thinking Gray's this great guy. But I knew in my heart, I knew from the first time that I met him. And had I stayed on him, maybe he wouldn't have done that to my daughter. And then Karen, I think because she feels hurt and stupid that she didn't know in the same way that Keegan was telling her that previously, right? She's just like, oh, so you think all of a sudden because you're some absent dad, you could be back 5 minutes and know everything that could have saved our child's life? And Mitch is like, yes, I did know. And if it wasn't for you convincing me otherwise, our child would still be alive, baby. Like, the hurt that those two are going through, like the grief of dealing with something like that in your real life, unimaginable. And trying to talk through those things and trying to figure out where to place blame outside of yourself when the person who has murdered your daughter is nowhere around for you to, you know, issue that rage to them.
Properly blame, yeah.
Man, whew. But those scenes were powerful. So the conversation those two had was real and tough. I'm sorry that it led to Karen kicking Mitch out, but I get it. And on the bright side, Mitch is now staying with Mick, so we have that friendship being centered again. Because I felt like over the past couple years, we weren't getting enough of Mitch and Mick's friendship. That has been one of the best aspects of the show. And with Mick on his way out the door, we need more of that love together. So
yeah.
Karen versus Mitch and the way that they kind of both dealt with the reality of recognizing that Gray was the murderer and how they both kind of enabled his mess for a little bit. Fire. I loved it. I loved it. Thought it was great. You know? Mm-hmm. And I'll go ahead and throw Keegan in as well, because Keegan was on himself, you know, pretty hard during that aftermath week as well. Because he's just like, you know, I let that man buy me. He bought my business. He bought my love. I was looking up to a man that physically abused and ultimately murdered my sister. What kind of man am I to have not seen this? Right? Totally unfair. But see, again, that grief and the depth of feeling that he had saying all that, like I could feel it. You know, and so listen, when brother was done and he was not going to accept the blood money from the murderer of his sister, and he set fire to that business that bastard paid for, I was here for it. Just like I was here for everyone who saw him torch that business saying nothing to the cops so that Keegan didn't get in trouble. Fantastic. And then, you know, he's having excellent conversations with his mom and dad about feeling, you know, the weight of responsibility as the brother. And when all is lost and he's not knowing, you know, what to do, who comes back to save the day?
Tiffany!
Queen Tiffany. Giving him an alibi so he doesn't get in trouble. And finally being able to reveal that she loves him, and he able to reveal that he loves her because Liam
Liam's a
switched
stupid
up the
dude.
letter. I'm not mad at him. He was protecting the sister. I ain't mad. But Liam switched the letter, and so Keegan didn't get the letter where Tiff's like, "Come see me if you still love me." All he got was divorce papers. So they got to work all that out, and then they got their nice little happily ever after where they walked, not cabin goed, off the screen. Just
Yep.
fantastic. And
I
see,
was very happy with that too, because it's
yes.
really nice to see something not cabin going. I
Yes.
am so flippin' sick of cop version of cabin goes. Cabin goes. Oh, there's a random car on the street. We'll get in that and drive away. I just kill somebody or have them do what Tiffany and Keegan did and just walk off, because that was necessary.
Yeah, I just appreciated that, Keegan's character has shifted. He has come a long way from being a Jada of the show, that is just being mean and hateful and having no depth whatsoever except the mean thug black kid, to being warm, well-rounded, sweet, a family man, a businessman. His trajectory was excellent. And the brother, even though he got on my nerves in the early days, the brother played Keegan was phenomenal the whole time. So I love his exit week. And, if he comes back to the show, I'm here for it because he was excellent, excellent in that role. But
He can come back with Tiffany and they can get
agreed.
remarried.
Agreed. I'm here for it. Yes. And then my last scene of the week is just small and petty. So I liked, after it was the week after the reveal that Gray was the murderer, and Kim was talking to Denise in the house about how, Chelsea was, just kind of knew what Gray was doing and didn't say anything, didn't report it. And Denise was kind of, trying to have some sympathy for Chelsea. And Kim was just like, I mean, you and I wouldn't have knowingly married serial killers. And I was like, yeah, you do have a point there.
And then you had Chelsea, who was just standing there in the corner listening to the conversation the entire time before walking out.
But I was good with it because she was stupid. How many times did Whitney and Kirat try to warn her and she was being a damn idiot since Christmas and finding out about that little girl being beat up in them forums? So I thought that was what she needed to hear. So I was kind of glad she was there and hearing that stuff because she was stupid. And she needed to take that lesson so, maybe the next time she's involved with a man, she kind of acts more wise instead of putting herself in harm's way and the town in harm's way for no doggone reason, So now it was, I gave it a seat of the week, but I mean, Kim thought that Vincent was a murderer and Denise got with Lucas. So, not the exact same thing. But see, neither of, well, Kim more than Denise knowingly got involved with a man she thought was violent. Denise didn't know that was going on at all. But I just
Yeah,
thought
it's
that
like
message
we
needed
knew
to get out
Vincent.
there.
We knew, yeah, it's like we knew Vincent was violent. Let's be fair.
Yes. But I just thought it was good and the words needed to be said. And I was here for it. It was petty, but I was here for it. I was here for it. All right, baby girl, that is all I got. Do you have anything else for Oats Enders other than, beautiful, brilliant, wonderful, spectacular, marvelous, took too long, needs to stay longer?
Yeah, I don't think so. I had something in my head, but I forgot what it was.
Well, I am glad that Kate Oates is steering the ship. I'm glad that in the first 3 weeks, the show is already on the upswing like I expected it would be. And I'm very interested in what happens with EastEnders over the next year because, again, everything Kate Oates touches, golden, except Rob Ron. And Holby City has been fire under, is it Chris Crenshaw? Is that the new producer? Let's look it up. Chris Clenshaw, there it is. So yes, Chris Clenshaw is the gonna be the new EP, and yeah, you're right, baby girl. It says he is returning to EastEnders, so I guess he's worked on EastEnders before, but it says as his executive producer in 2022.
Yeah, because I was like, I've heard that name before. I've seen it or I've heard it, and I can't remember if it was for EastEnders or something
he
else.
He spent four, and this is from Michael Fairman. I'm kind of surprised this is the source. But yeah, it looks like, oh God, this is annoying. Okay, let's wrap up and then I'll say what I'm about to say. I'm on Michael Fairman's site and I just saw annoying news. So Chris Collinshaw, he spent 4 years as a storyline and script editor for EastEnders, and now he's coming back as EP. So I'm here for it. I think that's going to be great. I think that is going to be great. Yes. All right. Well, with that, I will say that I'm at Brother Soap.
And I'm at Lindsay Amanda.
Thank you all so much for listening. Until next time, those case numbers going up, y'all. In the U.S., it's starting to uptick as well. So, as I am now prone to say at the end of every episode, get yourself vaxxed, wear yourself a mask, do not let COVID or stupid legislators give you your ass. Y'all take care of yourselves. Bye, y'all.
Bye.